been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Friday, October 17th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I'm your host, Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, sitting in for Bill today as he gives his presentation at the St. Regis there in Longboat Key in Florida, right outside of Sarasota. But also excited to have Jeff Webster joining me on the show today. Advisor here at the firm. And as we look at the market, we have a little bit of green on the screen, kind of surprisingly. Pretty much markets are fairly flat. We've got the Dow Jones up 0.28% today. That's 129 points if we're counting at home. We've got the S&P 500 up just 13 basis points, but in the green to 6,636. And NASDAQ pretty much flat, up 20 points. 22,582. Bitcoin continues its slide, down 2.36% at the moment, down about 2,500 to 105,663. And then lastly, surprisingly enough, gold down today, $94, down 2% after just an amazing run so far. But good morning again and welcome to the Friday, October 17th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I'm your host, Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital, sitting in for Bill today, and we've got Jeff Webster joining us on the show as usual. How's it going? Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Barry, and good morning to everyone out there listening to us. Happy Friday.
Yeah, it's it always seems like sometimes we get some eventful stuff on Friday, but at times not exactly what I thought was going to be on the bingo card at the end of this week, but I don't know, at times I guess the market acts like a time machine some sort. Within, you know, the last 24 hours, it feels like the market got caught up in a time warp, transporting us back to March of 2023. And that was when we had the failure of Silicon Valley Bank. I want to say it was around March 8th or so. But some others needed cash infusion. Some others failed as well. I don't know. Are we on the cusp of a regional bank crisis? The market's kind of acted like it towards the end of the day, and that's kind of been some of the narrative this morning.
It looks like there's a little bit of a bounce with the regional banks, with Amex, doing a beat. And I think we'll jump into it a little bit later, but some of these guys have reported some fraudulent loan activity that they got caught up in where they were duped a little bit. So we can dive into that a bit later.
Yeah, kind of some of the skeletons from March of 2023 with the names Zions Bank Corporation and Western Alliance. Were a couple of the names of choice around there. Comerica was even getting caught up in it. The last go around, of course, I believe they just had a merger or got purchased by another bank. So I guess their name will be off the list this go round, but we'll see how that plays out. But obviously, before we get too far ahead into headlines of today, we look back yesterday. We had basically a down market across the board. S&P was down 0.6%, NASDAQ was down 0.5%, and the Dow was down 0.7%. So kind of red across the board. Continuing some ongoing trade conflict and some of the rhetoric back and forth, right, between the U.S. and China. And then, of course, towards the end of the day is when we had some of the news from Zions Bank Corp and Western Alliance. And that's really kind of what led to the red numbers across the board. Of course, the one thing that that didn't change much yesterday is that, as we discussed also on Wednesday's show, was just how gold continued to lead the market. I think we had the quote, Eddie Ardeni said that gold is the new Bitcoin. And, you know, we look at gold continuing to go up, and Bitcoin's hit a pretty big stiff resistance since topping it. And then got up to about 126,000 a coin earlier this month, and what I think trading around 105,000 at the moment. Gold has continued to rise. I mean, the number of tailwinds and kind of this banking crisis and kind of a flight to safety is the newest, kind of driver, Jeff, in terms of it being, potentially a safe haven trade. But I mean, you've just seen this, historic rise in the metal for the last, handful of years, whether it was, in terms of all the tailwinds that they've had, that gold's had in terms of inflation hedge coming out of COVID, right? We had, of course, with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, you had many central banks around the world, right, started to step up demand for gold. So I believe, right now it's the most held asset by central banks around the globe. U.S. Treasury is being pretty close to that, too, by the way. But then you also had, this year's leg up, you had kind of the uncertainty driven by the tariffs and in a bit of a weaker dollar, and also, Fed interest rate cut hopes. I was looking at the percentages this morning, and literally 100%, right now pricing in 100% chance of another 50 basis points being cut this year, which would equate to 225 basis point cuts at the remaining two meetings, one in October, I believe, and the other being in kind of early-ish December. But that, essentially I was looking at the percentage of that. So really, 100%, really 0.5% potential cut in interest rates. And when you have, as we know, gold doesn't pay much of a dividend, does it? Does it, Jeff? I mean, not much cash flow there. It actually has a negative cash flow in terms of cost to store it, right? So you're giving up potential interest, and also it usually has a cost in terms of storage. But as interest rates go down, that cost of holding gold, right, actually diminishes, which gives it another, kind of tailwind. And then, of course, the newest piece being the safe haven trade. So it's just amazing to see kind of the records that it's been hitting.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, it's like those gold guys, they always have to, when you try to sell the physical gold, the folks that you typically sell it to, there's some type of a wholesaler, and they've got to deal with their spread. And so it can be problematic at times. We lean towards those other types of gold investments,
right? But we get our exposure via GLD and ETF or even IAU. But what I haven't seen this gold kind of rush moment is I haven't seen the sign flippers anymore. Have you remember you used to have when gold was going up, you'd have like the sign flippers on the side and sell your gold here. I was just thinking,
you'd be cleaning out your sock drawer or something like that on a Saturday afternoon, and you'd find some little gold bracelet or chain that you got when you were a kid or whatever, and you're like, okay, I'm going to swing by that retail establishment and see what I can pick up for this thing to pick up a little bit of pocket change.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the sign flipper is like a, kind of a lost art, in terms of skill set that we haven't seen. I mean, it got replaced by the thing with the air that shoots through it, and it has all the little ribbons that makes you kind of look over to the side. But yeah, that's one thing I've kind of been, you kind of judge, some of these, some of these moments by, right? And that's kind of what you would see. But when a lot of this demand has really been driven by central banks and, central bank, demand, across the, across the globe. So it's pretty interesting when, of course, we normally are, talking a lot more about equities, but, gold's been a and been one of the assets to be in of 2025 for sure.
Yep.
And even Jamie Dimon finally said that, he said it seems semi-rational to own gold. So he's never been a huge bigger buyer of gold. As he says, it costs 4% to own it, at least right now in terms of deposit, right? Obviously, the banker in him is always thinking of interest. So opportunity cost, he doesn't want to hold it in gold. He'd rather lend it out to you and, and make 4% on it in some form or fashion. So, well, we're just getting started here this morning on this Friday, October 17th. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about the regional banks and some of the issues that they're having. And we'll be right back. Here to the Friday end of the week edition of the Best Docs Now show. It's October 17th. I'm Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital, taking the wheel for Bill today as he's giving a presentation down there in the lovely St. Regis Hotel or Resort down in Longboat Key, Florida. So it'll be interesting to see what he brings back from that conference, but. I've also
hopefully Bill's getting a little bit of a suntan, in between sessions there. He deserves a little bit of an opportunity to relax. He's a hardworking folks, not only for everyone here at Gunderson Capital, but for all the folks that he services out there, on our radio listeners, our clients and stuff like that.
Yeah, picture him with the two screens, in front of him, by the pool with anywhere you can get two screens or at least one, that'll be maybe it'll reflect the sun will reflect off of him and give him a tan, a little bit of a tan that way, right? Gonna get her get the vitamin D. Well, we've got the good news is should be having. Whether the headlines or not, from a market perspective, fairly quiet. We've got, still got all of the major U.S. equity markets in the green, up just under 0.25%, actually. All of them trading within about two basis points of each other. So, in terms of, as we've talked about a little bit on Wednesday, in terms of the kind of that push-pull narrative, we've had, especially on one end with headlines where we didn't have any earnings during that kind of earnings season lull. And then, of course, now on the other end, we are getting earnings data. And so, you've got you get this push-pull between, information and, and actual numbers and actual data and earnings. But, we're, of course, in the very early innings of earnings season, but, as we've highlighted, things are been going well out of the gates, particularly with the big bank earnings have outperformed. Of course, the primary news driver continues to be, tariff talk. And this morning, actually, I think President Trump kind of cooled things down a little bit in terms of calling, I guess he referred to the triple-digit tariff rates on China as unsustainable. I guess the assumption is there, if they're unsustainable, then, that would increase optimism that you'd get to some type of deal at some point. So, I guess, in terms of reading those tea leaves, that's, part of the narrative. And then, of course, yesterday we had the market had a new narrative, in terms of introduced into the markets was credit risk, right? So particularly, credit risks surrounding regional banks. As we talked about, the two names making the headlines were Zions Bank and Western Alliance. And You know, yep, those are, you know, some of the names that you probably remember back during the, you know, regional banking crisis in March of 2023, where we lost, you know, names like Silicon Valley Bank. A few others got gobbled up because they didn't have enough capital. But, you know, so, yet, you know, yesterday, that's kind of what broke into it. And, you know, Jeff, I know you've got some info in terms of, you know,
yeah,
what quite
so
was happening
Zions,
on the bank,
you know,
side, I guess, first, you know, with the banks, and then we can get into the, to those default, individual
yeah.
defaults, you know, later on.
Well, Barry, it all boils down to lending and credit. And, you know, I'll take, you know, if we have any time today, I'll talk about some things that we can correlate to the crash of 1929, what we saw in 2008 with the mortgage crisis. But it's all talking about people and companies and banks becoming overextended. And so, you know, Zions, you know, going back to them, they're taking a 60, they're taking a $60 million provision and a $50 million charge off on two commercial loans that they did through one of their California bank subsidiaries. And, you know, the allegations are that it involved misrepresentation, contractual default, and irregularities in respect to borrowers, grantors, and the collateral. And they're actually filing a lawsuit in California, you know, which is, you know, again, it's too bad. You know, to me, the bigger story is, you know, what's happening with, you know, First Brands and Tricolor, both
right.
companies involved in the automotive industry, one being an auto parts, you know, supplier. And, you know, they filed bankruptcy. And again, it's tied to lending. They started to sell their receivables, you know, so Barry, you know, when organizations need cash flow, they look at what collateral they have, and they have monies that are coming into them in the form of accounts receivables. And so what they end up doing is they end up packaging, you know, those, receivables, and they sell them off.
For some immediate liquidity.
And, right. Yep. And they get some cash that helps them run their operation, and they give up a little bit. And, in return, they get immediate cash to help them out. And so they started, you know, packaging up these challenges, and some of the big banks bought into these things. And, well, they found out that, in many cases, the way that these things were packaged were, you know, not necessarily above board. You know, we've heard Bill the last couple of weeks warn about
some parts of the private credit markets. Correct. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. I mean, in the public markets, you know, we have the SEC, we have big, you know, accounting firms that come in and audit, and they have to report, and we can see what's going on. But in many cases, when these other things occur, they don't have to fully disclose all this stuff. And, you know, Tricolor Holdings, they're a company that sells used cars, but for all intents and purposes, Barry, they are a financing company. You know, buy here, pay here type of concept. And they got into a scenario where they started doing auto loans for people that had, you know, they were subprime loans. People
very
didn't
high.
Have great credit,
right?
In some
very
cases,
high
they
rates.
Didn't even have Social Security. Yeah, and so it can be very profitable business, but you know, if the ceiling falls out and people start not paying those loans, it becomes very, very risky. And so that's what's happened to them. And, you know, it draws a lot of analogies to what happened, you know, in 2008 with the mortgage crisis. Certainly that was significantly larger, much deeper. But it's very, very similar, where it just people got overextended and, lending institutions got a little bit too aggressive in giving their money out,
Yeah, the market time machine in full effect. Well, we've gotten through the first half of today's Best Stocks Now show, and we'll be back in the third segment to talk about some of the big AI boom and some of the big deals this week. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Back to the second half of the Friday, October 17th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I'm Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital, serving as a relief captain for Bill this morning. Also, as usual, I've got Jeff Webster joining me on the show. Jeff's an advisor here at Gunderson Capital Management. And, of course, to stay up to date with our thoughts on the market, get Bill's newsletter at GundersonCapital.com, or if you'd like to chat with Jeff, myself, have a discussion about you know, where your portfolio is, what your allocation's looking like, and how you're getting that exposure, give us a call at 855-611-BEST. That's 855-611-2378. We're here to be a resource. Well, looks like markets are kind of teetering back and forth between red and green here, which, you know, no change after some of the headlines that we woke up to this morning. I think I'll kind of take it. I do see, and you know, interestingly enough, in terms of the risk off move in Bitcoin. I mean, we've had Bitcoin kind of, you know, get you know, kind of defy gravity a lot like gold. Oddly enough, gold down 2% today as well, but. And you had Bitcoin hit $126 or $126,000 a coin, and right now trading under 105. I don't know what the percentage is on that one, real quick, but I think it's close to a 14-15% pullback. If my brain's working well this morning, but you know, I guess, you know, to kind of finish up the bank side of it. And also the default with First Brands and Tricolor, you know, in that sense, you know, they seem to be, at least the banks are trying to say, hey, we got tricked, you know, there was some fraudulent activity or at least some non-disclosure in some of those particular deals, and it sounds like maybe collateral getting used twice, if you will,
yep.
And so. You know, essentially using the same collateral on two different loans, and neither one, you know, probably knowing about it and thinking they've got the first, you know, first lien on it. But it gets complex quickly. But, you know, why is it important? You know, it's important because if you look back at, you know, kind of, if you look back at, you know, essentially March of 2023, last go round, you know, it was really, you know, after, you know, we had, Silicon Valley Bank and a lot of that, you know, all that turmoil kick in. And then the one thing that pulled it out, announcement of something, we like to call ChatGPT. And then and then we had the, you know, first NVIDIA, earnings report that rocked the investment world. And then AI took off ever since, right? So really, you know, I'll credit AI for finishing off the, regional bank crisis. In March of 2023, and you know, if we look, I was looking at the number of deals this week, Jeff, in terms of, you know, we had a bunch of stories we didn't even get to on Wednesday, and you know, a lot of those were just, you know, deals that have been done in the you know, in the AI space. And of course, you know, it just seems with no matter what tailwinds or headwinds are out there for the market, that, you know, really since, you know, March of 2023, you know, kind of that AI trade has, you know, kind of just been the stalwart pretty much through, you know, through thick and thin. Of course, you know, he got caught up in you know, just like everything did in the market and during the tariff tantrum in the first part of 2025. But it's just amazing when you go through. I mean, you know, yesterday you had a, you know, just this morning, I think a deal announced with Meta and Blue Owl, essentially a $30 billion deal. They're buying a big data center infrastructure project in Louisiana. You know, one of the biggest, purchases, I think, in terms of a private capital deal on record. And the interesting thing about the project is, you know, to be completed in 2029. So, you know, there's some runway there, right? And then so that's where, you know, as Bill talks about long duration, you know, a lot of these deals, you know, you kind of, you know, this isn't, I don't think these are necessarily the first and last set of deals. I think, you know, these companies are trying to build out this infrastructure for an extended period of time. You know, we talked about NuScale. They had the massive Texas AI data center that, you know, for Microsoft, they're you know, basically buying, what, 200,000 NVIDIA chips for. You're talking about these projects in megawatts, where it's a, you know, it's a 240 megawatt hyperscale AI campus, and it's going to have NVIDIA is going to deliver 104,000 GB300 GPUs. Like,
and of course we had BlackRock NVIDIA talking about their acquisition proposal for Aligned data centers.
Yep,
$40 billion. You know, 40, yeah. I checked that. Not acquisition, but investments.
Yeah.
In them. So you know, Meta's aligning with Blue Owl, BlackRock, NVIDIA, some other investors are going with Aligned data centers, and it'll be interesting to see how these emerging players, you know, compete against the, you know, the legacy data center companies, you know, Amazon Web Services, Microsoft Azure. You know, that's something that I'm very intrigued to track and see how those relationships play out, and you know, to see if these guys in fact disrupt the, you know, the old school guard as it relates to the data center business.
Yeah, and it's global, right? I mean, you've got, you know, announcement of Microsoft renting a data center capacity in Portugal, you know, via NuScale, right? I think they're going to, you know, they're going to utilize, you know, 12,600 NVIDIA Blackwell Ultra GPUs, right? And so you know, just you know, building capacity not just here, but you know, but abroad, where you know, I believe NuScale is you know, working in, and Microsoft are working with the UK to make their largest AI supercomputer, right? I mean, it's you know, the story where, you know, and it's not just NVIDIA now, right? You got a story where this week where Oracle is going to deploy, you know, 50,000 AMD AI chips, right? Essentially,
what did I see? Oracle's projecting that their data center revenue is going to be like $144 billion by 2030.
Yeah, and with like a 30% to 40% gross margin, I believe, as well.
Unbelievable.
It's
like the proof's in the pudding. It's all based on conjecture and their planning and stuff like that, but that's substantial, Barry.
Well, and that's the, you know, and I think kind of early estimates, I believe, you know, were, you know, you had, I think it came out last week that, you know, the gross margins were going to be potentially 15%, when historically they've, you know, for data center, you know, it's been in that 30 to 40% range. And I think, you know, whether it's CapEx involved at the beginning or, you know, just whether it's, you know, the use of energy or what, they were expecting, you know, potentially those margins to be much smaller. And, you know, in Oracle, I think, has kind of proved that it's going to be, you know, they're going to be in the 35% range. And when you do the math, when you do the math and they gave a 5-year earnings target, actually, in the example that they gave. And, you know, their 5-year, you know, earnings figure is much higher than, you know, than the street at this point, which, you know, if you look at, doesn't, you don't have to be a genius. Look at this, you know, look at the chart of Oracle and what it's done. And, you know, you can see the days that, you know, earnings driven news or revenue driven news has pushed that stock up. Like Bill says, you know, stocks follow earnings, right? And so, just a massive, and that's where the, you know, that's where kind of the bubble, you know, talk versus, you know, versus AI is going to work and we're going to have, you know, lots of, you know, productivity gains, right? And, you know, it's going to pay off in these particular areas and you can actually equate it into, you know, better margins or what have you. You know, the, you know, that's kind of the, you know, on one side of the argument, right? You've got, you know, kind of that bubble narrative. This is like, you know, 2000 or, you know, or what have you. And there's, you know, smart people who've written papers, you know, from in that camp. And then, of course, you know, there's people, you know, on the other side who are, you know, have highlighted, right, even some of the early benefits that we've seen and just, you know, in terms of future investment of $3 trillion over the next handful of years. So, you know, kind of both sides can be a little bit right along the way. It'll just see, you know, there's going to be certainly winners and losers in that space as we keep going, which is what makes this exciting on a day-to-day basis. Well, we're third through the show, three-fourths of the way through the show, and we'll be right back for the final segment of the week. It's about... Welcome back to the October 17th edition of the Best Stocks Now show, the end of the week edition. I'm Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital, sitting in for Bill today. And as he finishes up the week, speaking out at the St. Regis on Longboat Key in Florida, hopefully sunny Florida today. And, of course, as always, we've got Jeff Webster joining me on the show, advisor here at Gunderson Capital, and still teetering around around even today. We've got the NASDAQ down, you know, basically three basis points now, down 7 points. We've got the S&P up almost 3 points, and we've got the Dow up just under 100 points. So biggest mover is the Dow up 0.22%. Everything else is basically flat today. Gold gaining some back there. Now only was down about 2.5% earlier, down only about 1.63% at the moment. It's on track to actually finish for its best week in 5 years. By the way, Jeff, you know gold must be moving if somehow I know that stat.
It's everyone's acting on Jamie Dimon's tip that it's for the semi-rational person or whatever it was that he stated, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think if most of us were semi-rational investors, we're probably doing pretty good. But you know, I think it's interesting in terms of, you know, as we're talking about, you know, AI and kind of the risks of AI and, you know, all the benefits, you know, it's also... You know, there's also going to be winners and losers along the way, and you know, I think it makes sense to highlight Astera Labs this week was kind of on the losing end of, you know, it in terms of, you know, there was a deal, you know, with AMD's and Oracle's partnership. Like we said, Oracle was going to buy 50,000 something chips from AMD. Some of that news hurt Astera. I mean, they were down 1 point this week, I think almost 19%. I mean, if you look at the stock and where it was from a chart standpoint, I think, you know, we owned it for a bit. I think we finally exited the full position. I think it was, at the very end of September, September 30th, to be exact. But, you know, the stock wasn't, I don't know, trading around 150 range since then. And so, you know, you've got, you know, we've had a lot of these names. You know, AMD was a quiet one, right, for an extended period of time. And then, of course, now you look at the direction it's gone in. And then, of course, you look at the direction of, you know, not picking on, you know, A-Lab, but it's just, you know, that's one that, you know, you've got for every winner, you know, there can be a loser in some of these big deals that are kind of going back and forth out there. So that's, you keep hearing that it could be, you know, circular capital, right? I'll do a deal with you, then you do a deal with them, and it all comes around, and right, everybody benefits.
Yeah.
In this case, it would have been, you know, in that particular deal, would have been more like, you know, musical chairs, and everybody had a chair, and then of course there's, you know, A-Lab is sitting there, you know, kind of didn't have a chair when the music stopped, at least in that sense, right? So.
Well, we would, Barry, we would, and I spent, you know, I spent 30 years in the software space, and we were involved in plenty of balance of trade deals where it's like, okay, you know what? You guys want us to buy this. We also provide this, which you utilize in your operation. Let's do some horse trading here and figure out how we can do some work together. So you see a lot of that. You know, you see, yeah, there's just, you know, some interesting results out there. You know, you mentioned, you know, Interactive Brokers reported yesterday. They beat their estimates. I like to track those guys. I like to track Robinhood. You know, of course, a few weeks ago, you and I had an opportunity to meet with a good friend of the show who works for Robinhood there in Santa Clara. That was an enjoyable conversation.
Yeah,
to get his perspective on things. SoFi is kind of in that space as well. You know, you have Bull that's stepping up now as well. So some of those folks that are, you know, attracting the new gen investors, you know, as platforms that allow those people, you know, to do their trading and investing and stuff like that, I think are picking up steam.
Yeah.
For the self-service types of folks and do-it-yourselfers.
Yeah, and if you look at IBKR, I mean, you know, interesting. I always use some of these numbers as kind of, you know, fervor for, you know, for appetite, right, for risk out there. And, you know, their Q3 revenue and earnings beat, right, the trading volume in stocks surged 67% year over year. Options trading volume was up 27% year over year. And so, you know, the way I look at that is, you know, and you got to remember that's year over year, right? So we're, you know, we've been in recovery mode in terms of the market. Really, I think that this particular leg up since the correction in 2022, I believe, just started. I think it's three-year anniversary was a few days ago. So, you know, so not only that, I mean, it had been a great time up to, you know, 2024 in the markets, right? 2023, 2024 were great years. Well, you know, they've got 67% more volume, right now than they even did then. So it just shows you kind of how that, you know, further and just the, you know, the trading activity, you know, how much, you know, in terms of as the market continues to hit all-time highs, right? We keep, you know, pushing up and valuations push up, and that's where, you know, where we get a little, you know, Bill gets a little restless in terms of, you know, having to, you know, keep an eye on and be vigilant there.
Can I offer up just a recommendation? This week, I just started a book, 1929, by Andrew Ross Sorkin. He's the individual that, he's a co-host of Squawk Box. He's a creator
of
Billions. Yeah, Too Big to Fail, but I just started that book, and it's fascinating, you know, to dive into it, and it really gives you an opportunity as an individual and as a consumer to think about how you utilize credit and to understand, again, how credit can be a good thing, but it also can be a bad thing, and you know, if anyone's looking for a good read, highly recommended. I'm enjoying it. You know, I'm several hours into it, and it's so far so good, and I'm learning a lot.
Well, yep, I'm going to pick that one up too. You got it on my list, and of course, stay up to date with that and other thoughts on the market, get Bill's newsletter at GundersonCapital.com. That's GundersonCapital.com. Or if you'd like to have a discussion with us, give us a call, 855-611-BEST. That's 855-611-2378. Have a great weekend, everyone.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.